listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.
Dr. Cynthia Andrews says, "The primary tenet in every spiritual tradition is to love one another. It makes the path very clear. Remove from within every resistance to love." Well, what resists love? It's all about the flow of energy, and energy is all about emotions. Dr. Andrews is my guest today, and we're talking about the path of emotions. Welcome to Full Power Living, the only show on international media dedicated to understanding the power and importance of human emotions. And I'm Eileen Dillon, your show creator and host, and I want to invite you to join me on one of our two chats, emotionalpro.com radio show page or blogtalkradio.com/FPL for Full Power Living. You can also call us toll-free, 888-498-0570. Dr. Cynthia Andrews is a naturopathic physician, an energy practitioner, and teacher. In her newest book, The Path of Emotions, Transform Emotions into Energy to Achieve Your Greatest Potential, she lays out a guide to the emotions. She leads her readers to understanding and harnessing the power of emotions so they can make better decisions, heal, and let go of the past so that they can create the life of their dreams. She has a private practice in Guilford, Connecticut, where she combines natural medicine with energy modalities, exploring the emotional and spiritual factors of health and healing. Dr. Cynthia Andrews, welcome to Full Power Living.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Eileen. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, I'm really excited about talking with you about emotions, especially having read your book, because there's so much of your understanding and mine that's in agreement. For example, that emotions are tools for us to use in navigating and exploring life. But I note that you didn't recognize this for a while, and you also say that emotions are more valuable than gold. And I want you to know I've been working as a psychotherapist for over four decades, and I learned a lot from you in the path of emotions. So I want to thank you for writing it and ask you, why do you say that emotions are more valuable than gold?
Well, for me, it's about the fact that emotions give us our most direct experience in the world of subtle energy. And there's been very little real understanding of the connection between the spiritual universe and the physical universe, and that connection comes through subtle energy. That's our way to kind of link them together. And in our body, we have this amazing vehicle that discerns energy, all this whole energy matrix that we live in, whether it's, our eyes looking at the electromagnetic radiations in the frequency of visible light or our ears hearing audible frequencies. Our body also receives these subtle energy frequencies and translates that into emotional information that when understood, can absolutely change the way that we interact in the world and our understanding of how to manifest our dreams and desires and create a better world for everybody.
You know, one of the things that I still don't have down totally is, okay, our body translates things or offers things in terms of emotions, but they also go through our perceptions are affected by our beliefs and mm-hmm. our past experiences. How exactly does that feed together in your understanding?
Well, it goes back into the whole thing that when our bodies are left alone to just work without any past history influence, when we experience a traumatic situation, two things happen. We have this surge of emotional information and energy, and that's exactly what emotions do. They provide us with information about our surroundings, and they provide us with energy to do something with it. And so in that moment, our brain processes the information our emotions are giving us, and our body discharges the energy. And if we're left alone, that's exactly how it happens. Unfortunately, we're frequently interrupted in that processing as children, and things don't get finished, and they stay inside of us as little traumas that create these limiting beliefs. And then the next time we experience something similarly, it will trigger this belief, and now instead of getting information about the present moment, we're getting information about where we're stuck in the past. But the emotion is still giving us information and still giving us energy, and when we learn that, we can follow that information into the past to where it got stuck and free the energy that is holding it there, and then, you know, continue in a more fulfilled way.
I really like seeing in print something that I discovered many years ago and share with my therapy clients, which is that whenever you get an emotion that an emotional reaction that's far out of proportion mm-hmm. to what's happening in the present moment, that is an indicator that it is something from the past. I really mm-hmm. appreciate that you put that in there.
Yeah.
I once had my wallet stolen from my backpack as I was walking on the street, and a couple of days later, my teenage daughter came home from a weekend trip, heard about it, watched me for a while, and then she said, "Why aren't you angry or upset? Most people would be angry or upset." And I said, "I think it's enough that they took my wallet. Why do I want to give them more of my energy by getting upset?"
And that takes wisdom. That takes emotional wisdom.
I found the quote. You included a quote from Don Juan in the teachings mm-hmm. of Don Juan from Carlos Castaneda. And he said, "No person is important enough to make me angry." Mm-hmm. This is what started you off with your emotions. How did it do that? What did it do for you to read that?
Well, I had, up until that point, I had really thought that I only had two responses to overwhelming emotion, and that response was either to suppress it or to express it in whatever way it threw me in the moment. I didn't really realize that there was a third response, and that third response was to utilize the energy of it. And Carlos Castaneda sort of opened up the door to realize that there was another way, that emotions, that we weren't just subject to the power of our emotions and they controlled us, that we actually could interact with them in a conscious way, which didn't require repressing or suppressing them, but also didn't leave us, you know, just completely enthralled to the destructive power that emotions can sometimes have.
Mm-hmm. Now, my learning is that emotions have destructive power when we hold on to them. Otherwise, they mm-hmm. just move through us, and I believe mm-hmm. you would say something similar. Is that correct?
Yes, that's absolutely correct. And if you look at the different ways that the body will hold on to emotions, it really feeds back into the whole idea of health and how emotions impact our health, in addition to, you know, how happily we live, it impacts our physical health as well through the ways in which our musculature tightens around those emotions that we don't want to express or let go of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's one of the things I really like about the path of emotions. You take this big net, and you're talking about the physical reaction and the emotional reaction and the interaction with our spiritual self as well. And I was appreciating this morning what a big focus you have to have to close in on it like that. That was really, really good. So a main thing, again, in my understanding, and I think you're in agreement, when we hold on to our emotions, usually through repression or suppression, mm-hmm. the primary thing that happens is that we block our own energy flow, and that's mm-hmm. where our emotional and physical health get disturbed, correct?
Yes, that's exactly right. And, you know, it's like these processes to block emotion are not necessarily negative or even harmful. Sometimes they're absolutely essential to survival. When you're in the midst of you know, a grief that is so overwhelming that it could lay you, you know, it could cause a psychotic break, then you need a little bit of a distance from it. You need to be able to close down the feeling enough and take it on a little bit at a time and a little bit at a time. You know, and when you're overwhelmed with fear, it can completely disable you. You have to get a little bit of distance from it. So these processes are not negative processes. It becomes a problem only when we don't go back and then visit the information and figure out what happened and release the energy and move on with our life, you know. And then when we don't do that, we're stuck forever staying in that place of fear or staying in that place of grief. And as you say, that then changes the flow of energy in our body and impacts our physiology as well.
Mm-hmm. Wow. I also appreciate that you discuss positive and negative emotions. And in my learning, all emotions are positive and become negative only when they pile up or get blocked inside of us. And, you know, again, you emphasize, I think you bring up the point in the book that a lot of people go, no, I'm not going to pay attention to my emotions. That's going to make it worse.
Mm-hmm.
And talk to us about that for a minute.
Yeah, I really agree with you that there are no such thing as negative emotions. There are comfortable and uncomfortable emotions, and we mistake uncomfortable emotions for negative. And, you know, I hear a lot, especially in kind of new thinking, people saying things like, I'm not going to pay any attention to my fear because that will just feed it, and fear is the worst thing that could happen. And I'm thinking, well, you know, what is it that your fear is trying to tell you? If you sit with your fear for a minute and don't spend so much of your energy pushing it away, it can deliver its message. You can use the energy that it's giving you, and then you move on, you know. But the longer that you spend trying to avoid it and the more energy you spend trying to push it away, the more it's controlling you and the more that it's shaping how you see the world and what you look at and what you're available to experience and perceive.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that decision to feel everything as it's coming and take the moment to understand the information of it is probably the key to working with emotions.
And I totally agree with you. I think the other important part for people to know is that the more you do that, the easier it gets.
Oh, so true. And, you know, you think that you have to do it all the time, and if you can't do it all the time, there's no point in doing it. And it's so not true. Even just doing it once in a whole week's worth of experiences gains you ground.
I agree with you. Now, here's a question that has long befuddled me. There are techniques now, like the emotional freedom technique. You have an emotional blockage. I'll do some tapping on certain spots in your body and sing happy birthday and a few other things that you do in that process. I don't wish to make fun of it, but it is kind of hilarious to do that. And the emotion lifts, and the person doesn't really ever have to look at it. And for me, the issue there is that you also don't get the message from the emotion.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a comment on that?
It's an interesting thing. So it depends. I mean, so for me, it just shows that there are more ways into an emotional piece than one way. We can come into it through our body, which as a body worker is a lot of what I do, is I find the muscle tension that is surrounding the emotion and repressing or suppressing it. And so I go into the muscle tension to discover what the feeling is, and through the feeling we can process the information and release the energy. But you can also go in directly through the energy. And By releasing and shifting the energy, you can shift the hold that it has on you. I don't actually believe that you can completely change the situation until you address the information that was being given you. I think it will come again, and it will come again, and it will come again, and you just kind of tap through your whole life. You know?
Right.
Uh-huh. So for me, it's like that's a great emergency situation. That's terrific to have in an emergency when you're spiraling down in an anxiety moment and you have to get out of it. But it isn't going to help you in the long run understand and change your emotional picture.
I so agree with you on that. And I think part of the issue is, I'm not saying that say the developer of EFT would believe this, but part of the issue is that most people don't believe that you can actually get finished with a particular emotion
mm-hmm.
or not have it stimulated in certain
mm-hmm.
situations.
Mm-hmm. So that actually is an interesting point, because what happens, of course, in the brain is that you get these neural networking happening between the amygdala and the hippocampus and different parts of the brain, so that every time a similar thing comes in, the easiest thing to do is to go down that old pathway, and the tapping can actually shift it so that you're not going down that old pathway. And similarly, with energy, your energy flow in your body is going to go along the pathways that are most used. And so you can see that you can process a lot of the emotion and receive a lot of the information, but still have a physical patterning and energetic patterning that tends to throw you in that direction. So to me, the techniques work amazingly well together. It's like process the information, do the therapy, do the energy work, do the tapping, do all of it, and, you know, shift the brain, shift the energy, receive the information, and design your life.
Mm-hmm. Wow. We're up to our first break, and I'm talking with Dr. Cynthia Andrews, who is author of a comprehensive and very helpful book about emotions and subtle energy entitled The Path of Emotions. And when we come back, I want to talk with you about how emotions are the gateway to personal power, which you talk about. So call in with your questions, 888-498-0570. You're listening to Full Power Living. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.
As a parent, have you found all the parenting information you've been hearing lately a bit confusing? Are you having trouble sorting out the best response to your defiant child, or feeling hopeless about regaining respect from your teen, or determining whether your actions as a parent are the right ones? Instead of the usual pressures of parenting that you've been experiencing, you can partner with your child, raising incredible kids who are destined to become amazing adults. I'm Eileen Dillon, the Emotional Pro, giving you the opportunity to become the incredible parent for incredible kids. We have the method and the tools. You bring your optimism for learning and the kids. Raise Incredible Kids offers a comprehensive system for raising kids who are responsible, make their own great decisions, and become immune to peer pressure. To get you ready for this new era in parenting, get my free 10-page report, Incredible Communication That Helps You Create Incredible Kids, by visiting RaiseIncredibleKids.com now. That's RaiseIncredibleKids.com. Welcome back to Full Power Living. I have a few announcements. Our upcoming guests are listed at the top of our radio show page on emotionalpro.com. Next week, my guest is Wendy Maltz, with whom I'll be talking about women's sexual fantasies. For those of you who have been waiting all these 9 years for me to have a show on sexuality, don't miss this show. If you can't listen to our live broadcasts on Blog Talk Radio or emotionalpro.com, please subscribe to Full Power Living on iTunes. And thank you so much for helping us with our mission of transforming our world through the mastery and power of human emotions. Today, I'm talking with naturopathic physician and energy practitioner Dr. Cynthia Andrews, who has written another book, The Path of Energy, Awaken Your Personal Power and Expand Your Consciousness. And she is co-author of The Complete Idiot's Guide to 2012, The Complete Idiot's Guide to the Akashic Record, which we were talking about last week, and Acupressure and Reflexology for Dummies. Now, before we took our break, Cynthia, I mentioned that I'd like to talk to you about your contention that emotions are the gateway to personal power and that we undercut our own personal power when we block the flow of emotions. Can you explain this to us?
Yeah, well, there's really two aspects to that that I think really speak to me. One is that it depends on what you think the purpose of being alive is. And I guess for me, the purpose of being alive is to grow and to develop and to expand in our awareness and expand in our consciousness. And so if that is the goal, then emotions are this amazing information highway that allows that to happen. And so when you start tuning into your emotions, you know, emotions feed us so much information that expands our awareness and our consciousness. And we tend to think of emotions as really big things, you know, anger and fear and joy and love. But the nuance of emotion that we experience in every moment is continually interacting with our physiology and our energy structures and our body and expanding our awareness and our perceptions in every moment. And just sitting in front of a sunset, the reason that a sunset is beautiful to us is because of that emotional nuance of information that comes to us. And, you know, so from that perspective of expansion, you know, paying attention to our emotion connects us to a larger picture of the world. And then in another whole aspect, so much of our personal energy to live life, the vitality with which we embrace our dreams and move forward into, you know, the interactions we have every day, come through our emotions. Without emotions, we're flat, we have no affect, and we have no umph for living. So our emotional intensity gives us that vitality and passion for life, and that's where our personal power comes from.
Wow. That's very interesting. Those of you who've been listening to the show for some time will recognize that first one where you say the purpose of being alive is to grow and expand. I envision and have for many years our Earth as a giant school to which we all come in order to learn and grow. And it has made such a difference to me, Cynthia, to just whatever comes up in my life, to recognize it as an opportunity to grow and to embrace it as the opportunity, because it seems to work like magic. As soon as you embrace the opportunity and you look for the growth or the learning, you're done with that and you're free to move on to something else.
Yeah, that's true. And you're not only done with it and free to move on, you're free to move on with a little bit more than you had before.
Yay! So talk again. Now, you work through the body, which you've been talking about here, but I've worked largely with emotions as emotions and not through the body so much. Mm-hmm. And I found your discussion about the body quite fascinating, because emotions stay in the body. Like, I think you had a description of an accident or something that that jars you, and so you have energy that gets blocked at the point of impact, and also however far that energy extends during the time of energy into your body, there can be another energy block. Talk to us about the body and emotions.
Well, you know, the person who first really put this together in a way that made a lot of sense to me was Wilhelm Reich, who was a psychoanalyst in the 1950s, who identified this flow of energy in the body, which he called orgone, and noticed that, you know, it flowed in streams up and down, and that it could be blocked in its flow through strong emotions. What he identified was 7 segments within the body where if you tighten one part of that segment, the entire segment tightens so that it is a ring of tension that closes down that movement of energy. And I think if all of us right now just tightened up our chest, we would notice that our back at the same level tightens up as well. But our stomach underneath doesn't necessarily tighten, or our back underneath doesn't necessarily tighten. And that chest segment is, of course, one of the segments that he identified. And so when you feel an overwhelming emotion, and, well, that's the other thing that he identified, is that emotions are generated in the body, not necessarily the mind. which in the 1990s, Candace Pert, in her book Molecules of Emotion, you know, Candace Pert is a neuroscientist, and she really identified and showed the mechanisms for how that happened, that emotions are generated in cells as neuropeptides, and that they can be generated in the body or in the brain, and that they basically are the molecule that connects the brain and the body together and allows a concentrated flow of information. So I think science is really backing up what Wilhelm Reich had originally seen. So what he was saying is that when there's an overwhelming emotion that's generated in one of these segments, so if we stayed in the chest segment, we might look at grief, and that was just so intense we couldn't feel it in that moment, then that segment would tighten up. And in tightening up, it would decrease how much we felt the grief, and it would also decrease the amount of energy flowing through the area, because the energy is emotion. Emotion is energy in motion, and when you stop the movement of energy, you stop the feeling of the emotion. So with that thought, you could go through your whole life and never feel grief again if you kept that tension really tight, but then you'd also never feel the rest of the emotions in that segment, like love and joy and satisfaction and things like that. And so to live a full life, you have to have this flow of energy, which means you need to process those things. But in small moments, a tightening of that segment can be really helpful. When you have an injury, like you go through a car accident and your head hits is impacted, on the windshield, there's a vector of force that moves into your body. And as it's moving into your body, it creates not only pain and injury at the moment it hits, but also at the place where the force line stops in your body. And this was kind of talked about by Dr. John Upledger of the Upledger Foundation, who developed cranial sacral work. And he called these places where the vector of force stopped, he called them energy cysts. And inside of these energy cysts is the emotion that was happening at the time of the accident that followed that line of force into the body and is now living inside of this energy cyst. And as you're healing, you can heal the muscles and you can heal the bone and you can heal all these other things. But until you get to the emotion that's stuck in this energy cyst, you're never going to completely heal to the other side. And so you'll see people after accidents, everything seems to be fine. The muscles are all fine, but they still have neck pain and they still have headaches that don't go away. And there's no physiological reason. But when you start to investigate the emotion that's lodged in the body, then things start to clear up and heal.
Now, as a naturopathic doctor, and I know you for many years did massage as well,
mm-hmm.
How do you go about investigating emotion in the body?
I do it through muscle tension, and I learned this technique through Jin Shin Do, which I think is one of the most phenomenal forms of body work for doing this, where you just identify, Wilhelm Reich talked about how there are patterns of body armoring, where we mm-hmm. armor ourselves from the things we don't want to feel. And so if someone's on the table and I can see that they have a pattern of muscle tension, we go in and we explore that pattern, and we do it through Jin Shin Do, which is a form of acupressure. And so holding those points immediately kind of puts people into a trancey state, and in that trance state they have an opportunity to have access to subconscious information that they wouldn't normally have available to them. And then we can use imagery and dialoguing and what some people might call shamanic journeying to feel what's in there and explore it and understand it and come to some kind of peace with it and then release the energy that's surrounding it. And, we don't come into these things by accident. I found this way of working satisfying because of the amount of pain I had in my body from several different injuries and the degree to which I hadn't healed. And then in finding the healing through these techniques, that, of course, is what started my real path and investigation into these mm-hmm. types of modalities.
See what I mean about the earth being a giant school?
Yes, absolutely.
I just love it. You have no idea, doing this program for 9 years, how many people write books, get involved in work because they had some illness or some injury or some trauma. I mean, it's wonderful. It seems like it's just really great the way the system is. You go through it. You have a problem. You go through it. You fix it up. Then you can turn around and help others.
It's absolutely true. Somebody once said that your greatest challenge becomes your greatest gift, and it is absolutely true.
Right. So you follow the body sounding model in working with emotions, and that involves the chakras, and I think one of the purposes of your writing is to invite people to become more aware of the energetic information that we need to integrate. I'm not making sense. You make sense of this.
You're making very good sense. You know, it's a hard one for people to grasp, especially if they haven't come through some of the traditions that deal with these energy structures in the body. But, you know, essentially the idea is that as much as we have eyes and ears and other things and taste receptors and things that experience and bring in the frequencies in the world around us, we also have subtle energy structures in our body that are receiving information and metabolizing that information into physiology, for lack of a better word, that we can then directly interact with. And in every indigenous tradition in the world, these structures exist and are talked about and are part of the thinking. We are most familiar with them in this society through Hindu Vedic tradition, where they're called chakras. And so, like, if you do yoga or Tai Chi or some of these other forms of relaxation exercises, you come in contact with these chakras and how they function. Each one of the chakras is reflective of a certain level of consciousness. And as we work in a chakra and as the information that comes in through that chakra is feeding certain parts of our awareness. And when we use the system in its totality, of course, our awareness expands and our consciousness expands. And so each of the chakras will take the information coming in and metabolize it and then transform it into an emotion, and then that emotion becomes where we, you know, what we interact with to understand the information of that moment.
Yeah, so that, okay, I'm toying in my own mind is, you know, does emotion start? I know you discussed this some. Mm-hmm. First of all, let me just say, all of this information, such a wide variety of information, the whole discussion of the chakras and so forth, you have included in your book, and I want people to realize that they have the opportunity to go over this and digest it and understand it and see diagrams and the whole thing. So thank you for putting that in there. I know you talk about some people suggest that emotions begin in different organs, and you're also saying that energy coming through the chakras gets translated into emotion. So in my own head, I'm going, well, what is it? Do we really know whether emotions start in our organs or our chakras or both or what?
Well, you know, if you look back in the ancient tradition, each of the chakras is connected to a specific endocrine gland and organ and part of the body. And so it's really all an interconnected whole. And we try and break it down and say, you know, anger comes from the liver and you know, therefore it's such and such. But the liver is in the segment where the third chakra is, and the third chakra also manages anger. You know, so they're interrelated, they're interactive. And it really depends on your perspective coming in, how you're going to see it. And if you can't relate to the idea of energy structures, then maybe you're going to relate better to the idea of organs. And some people would never even accept that. I mean, I can hear my brother-in-law laughing as we're talking that an organ is related to emotion would just seem absurd to him. You know, emotions are created in the brain and that's it.
Well, you know, it's very, very interesting. Many years ago, before much of this was available, I had a man as a client who was a police officer, and he was one of the nicest people you ever want to meet in your life. And he developed gallstones, and he was going to go have an operation. And I started listening to, and you talk about listening to what people say about the body too. You know, you've got a lot of gall to be saying that, you know, that galls me, etc. So I thought, well, maybe there's anger inside of it. So I invited him to work with me for the 3 weeks prior to the operation to process whatever anger he might have, which was kind of a surprise because he was such a nice guy. You wouldn't think he had any anger, right? But we processed it, and the long and the short of it was he never had the operation. He didn't need it.
It is fascinating, isn't it? And that kind of thing happens over and over again, because if we don't listen to the emotion when we feel it in our body, it doesn't go away. It just stays and it generates a bigger and bigger and bigger voice until we're forced to stop and listen to it.
Yeah, you have. You say when ordinary emotions aren't fully processed, they live past their usual lifespan. I love that quote. Now, I also like that you talk about emotional mastery. I keep emphasizing to people that we have the capacity to master emotions. We don't just have to corral them like a herd of wild horses. And you say using our emotions with skill and mastery means being free of past conditioning and able to recognize and experience our emotions from a heightened state of being. And this can only happen when we're aware of and responding to our body, because the body has the tools of emotional mastery. Expand on that, please.
Wow. Okay, that's a big that's a big arena.
This whole topic is.
Yes, it really is. It's hard to narrow it down into little small bites. Essentially, you know, oh God, I don't even know where to begin. You've stumped me.
Do you want me to back up and break it down, or what?
Yeah, break it down into a question that I can grab hold of here.
Okay, well, first of all, talk about mastery versus management and why you focus on mastery.
Okay, thank you. Okay, so now we're down into a little bit. Okay, so emotions, you know, we talked before about positive and negative emotions, or comfortable and uncomfortable emotions, but another piece to that, I mean, is that we have ordinary everyday emotions and we have transcendent emotions. And the ordinary everyday emotions have a lifespan. They come, they rise, they give us the information and the energy that we need, and then they dissipate and they go away. As soon as we recognize them, they go away. If we don't recognize them, and if we don't process that information, then and they outlive their lifespan, as we talked about. When you begin to develop emotional mastery, you're listening and processing as you're going along, so that you don't have this buildup of things. And I have these little tools towards the back of the book that kind of give them, you know, ways of handling emotions when they first rise up, and using them in a positive way, so that we don't end up kind of allowing them to live past their lifespan. But when they do, one of the things that we can do is to utilize transcendent emotions. Transcendent emotions, as defined by Jonathan Haidt, who's a socio-something or other, he talks about them as being emotions that lift us up outside of our own well-being. They lift us up a little bit higher than just concern over our own well-being. And when we learn how to kind of initiate a transcendent emotion, we begin to shift our brainwave patterns, which changes how we perceive things and changes how we interact with them. One of the emotions that we could look at is compassion. And there was a study done in Wisconsin using the Tibetan monks and in their meditation practice and measuring their brainwaves. And the highest level of brainwave that we can measure is the gamma brainwave level. And the way that the monks would initiate this gamma brainwave activity was to meditate on compassion. And that really shows us the power that these transcendent emotions have to lift us up out of that moment where we are so engaged with an unfinished emotion that we can't process in the moment, but we have to leave behind in order to, you know, take full advantage of the moment. And that's when we want to call in a transcendent emotion.
Mm. You got a compliment on our chat. The true sign of an intelligent person admits that she's confused instead of just going on so as not to look informed. And then through asking, she comes back with a fantastic, eloquent answer.
Oh, well, thank her very much.
Isn't that nice?
Yeah, that was nice.
Okay. So we have a question from someone who's on the line but isn't ready to risk talking to us, but we're really grateful for this question. Trina, I believe her name is. She's from California. She wants to know about any practical exercises to dispel or discover an emotion, which we were going to get to later, so now's a good time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, I give a fourfold process of emotional mastery, if you will, in the book. And, you know, before I talk about that, I just want to back up to one of the things that emotions do is shift the energy in our own body. So, for example, if you are angry, anger almost always talks about boundary issues, and it's informing us that our boundaries have been breached in some way or an injustice has occurred that we have witnessed that feels like, you know, an insult to our boundary. And it gives us energy to strengthen that boundary and to hold, you know, to hold true to ourselves, if you will. So if you know that, then when you feel anger, you can immediately just send your energy out into your boundary and the emotion can dissipate. It doesn't need to be there anymore. It's done what it meant to do. It meant to strengthen your boundary. You've assisted it. You've done it. It's over, you know. So
How do you send it out? Wait, let me just stop you there. How do you send it out to your boundary?
So emotions follow, or energy follows your mind. Wherever you put your mind, your energy flows to. So the moment I put my mind into this imaginary boundary of my aura around me, immediately my energy flows out there and creates that boundary for me. And that's an ancient, you know, practice of the Chinese martial artists, essentially. So using these ideas of sending our mind where we want our energy to go and looking at what is it that our emotions do to our energy, what is it that they're trying to show us? You know, fear is obviously trying to keep us safe. If we tune into what's happening energetically when we feel fear, all of the energy comes into our core and then it is available immediately for fight or flight use. And so if I know that, I can pull my energy right into my core and I can ground and prepare myself and look and see what do I need to do in this moment? How can I use this energy for action? So a lot of working with emotions is beginning to learn what are they doing to us energetically and how can I assist that so that the emotion doesn't have to be present anymore. So the fourfold process of mastery is first just making the choice that I'm going to approach emotions from that level of thinking about them as opposed to from the level of, you know, I'm at the mercy of my emotions. You make that choice. The second thing you do is notice what's happening in your energy and assist it, and then make a heart-centered action. And in the body sounding model that I present in the book, the heart chakra is the center of our being. It's the center of our spiritual being. It's the center of our physical being. And when we move into that center and work out of that center and make our choices out of that center, then we're going to be acting from just a slightly more expansive state.
Uh-huh. That's really interesting. Now, see, I've approached... I need to actually take a break, but I'll tell you this. I have approached emotions differently. I love your comprehensive approach, and I'm being informed by it and learning from it. To me, like you say, that anger is an insult to our boundary. The very simplistic way that I've understood it is that we hold ideas in our brain that usually get developed quite early about how things are supposed to be in the world. And anytime we experience a violation of our idea of how things are supposed to be, whether it's something that should happen and it doesn't, or it should not happen and it does, people get angry. Mm-hmm. And therefore, you can shift an anger by changing your shoulds, which is a way of processing it. And the other part is that I see that the message of anger really is to tell us that the picture we have of what's supposed to be true in the world is inaccurate, and we need to update our picture. And when you update your picture, the anger disappears also for that thing.
Do we need to take a break and come back to
we
that?
We need to take
I
a
respond?
Break and come back to that. Sorry, I got all excited about that. Thank you. I don't know how I'd run this show without you. Okay, we're going to return following this break. We're talking with Dr. Cynthia Andrews, and please stay tuned for more with Dr. Andrews. You're listening to Full Power Living.
You're listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.
Do you know that emotionally, children form the foundation for their life during their first 7 years? Most adults just repeat that early emotional learning, good or bad, over and over for the rest of their lives. If you want to give your child an opportunity to live an emotionally masterful life, then join me, Eileen Dillon, also known as the Emotional Pro, for a free one-hour teleseminar on what it takes for your child to become an emotional master. You'll discover important things like what emotions are designed to do for us, four things it's vital for parents to tell their children about emotions, and the single most important thing to do when someone is feeling emotion. Register now at RaiseIncredibleKids.com. The time has come for us to allow emotions their rightful place in our lives as the tools and helpers they're created to be. Find out what you need to know in order to give this vital information to your children so they can live emotionally masterful lives. Go now to RaiseIncredibleKids.com for your free Emotional Mastery Teleseminar. We're back here on Full Power Living talking with naturopathic physician and energy practitioner and teacher, Dr. Cynthia Andrews. Our toll-free number is 888-498-0570, and Dr. Andrews' book is called The Path of Emotions. So, Cynthia, before our break, I was talking to you about how I have learned to approach emotions and, the real message is that we have an incorrect idea of how things are supposed to work, and that anger pushes us to do two things. One, to take action, which I think you also talk about, and two, to let us know that the idea we have about how things are supposed to be is incorrect. We need to update.
So I think that the way you described that was so perfect for describing past emotional information, that when anger is triggered in response to a past uncleared thing or a belief or a view of the world that isn't accurate, exactly as you said it. And then the other side of anger is that in the present moment, there are times when one should be angry. I mean, if you're sitting there and you're watching a child being abused, you should feel anger. And that would be the appropriate response, and the action that comes with that would be the appropriate action. You know, so there has to be a distinction between the anger in the moment that's really truly telling you about a boundary breach and an injustice that you need to act on, and a trigger of something in the past that represents an incorrectly held view of the world that needs to be processed and shifted.
Mm-hmm. That's a really great differentiation. Many years ago, I took a look around and I decided there were so many people in this world running their lives on the basis of intellect that I might be able to run my life purely on the basis of emotions or feelings, and thereby I could balance a few of the intellect-driven people off. And I did it for several years, and it really worked for me, but eventually I found myself bringing my intellect back in. In fact, to help me with it, I married a neurosurgeon who started trying to educate my brain as I tried to educate his emotions. And you talk about balancing intellect and emotions. Tell us more about that.
Well, you know, certainly in the way that the body is designed, our emotions impact our thinking all the time. And in different centers of the brain, that emotional information is brought in and matched with intellectual processing skills. They're meant to work together. That's how it's all designed. I think it's very interesting, and Daniel Goleman talks about this in his revolutionary book, you know, that our body feels situations first, creates the emotion, and then our mind comes to it second. And I think that that is a really interesting observation, and tells the importance of our emotions in our ability to form intellectual perceptions. They're all interwoven with each other.
And you, in the book, you have you report on studies that have been done where I think they were working with pictures. I don't know what, but the body reacted in anticipation to an unsavory emotional event even before the person was aware that, you know, they were seeing something.
There are a couple of really fascinating studies. One of the ones I talk about in the book is Dean Radin, who is the head of the research of noetic sciences. And the research that he did was about 10 years old now, but essentially he had people sitting and they were hooked up to physiological monitors like, you know, heart rate and I think sweat production and a few different things. And he would be sitting there with these pictures on a card, and one at a time the pictures would be shown to the person, and the person lifting them didn't necessarily know what was going to be on the other side. So it was a double, you know, blind study. But every single time, before the picture was even lifted, before the person saw whether it was going to be a pleasing picture or an upsetting picture, their body had a physiological response. And so Dean Radin kind of talked about this as a bow wave of experience, that information actually comes to us a little bit ahead of the experience. And when we're paying attention to our emotional responses, we have that little three-second time, you know, lag, if you will. And then if you look at other research that's been done on animals and animals, particularly prey animals, how they sense their predators before the predator is there and what parts of the brain get activated, we get this idea that it was a useful evolutionary thing to be able to interpret information before our brain actually had hold of it.
Mm-hmm. You know, I made that discovery probably 40 or more years ago. I was lying in my bed one day having taken a day off from work. And, you know, when you work for somebody else, the only way you can take a day off is to tell them that you're sick, you know. And so I was in bed, and I was there maybe 2 hours. It was 10 or 11 in the morning, and I said to myself, I'm not sick. Why am I in bed? And, you know, and I got to thinking about what sickness was all about. And to me, what it looked like is people go out, or this is the way it looked for me. I would go out and I would do things and I would extend myself out into the world. And if I kept going and kept going, I would just extend and extend and extend until I couldn't support that anymore and I would crash. Mm-hmm. And then I would get in my bed and I would say, I can't do anymore. I'm sick. Mm-hmm. And so it occurred to me that I also had little things saying, you know, you better slow down, you're tired, maybe you need more sleep, and that I didn't always listen to those. And I decided that if I listened to those messages that were coming, I might be able to keep myself from getting ill, and began to experiment with it, and it worked beautifully.
That's very true, and we can keep ourselves from getting ill, and we can, you know, keep ourselves in harmony with those relationships. You know, the certain people that are always pushing your buttons, there's a reason for that. If you pay attention ahead of time, you can probably avoid it.
All right. Well, thank you. I appreciate your sense of humor. You know, I feel like I could talk to you for days, probably. There is so much in your book. I really want to encourage all of you who are listening to check out The Path of Emotions by Dr. Cynthia Andrews, and that information is on the chat, her name and the name of the book. But sadly, we need to stop. You have a website thepathofenergy.com? Do you have any others? I couldn't.
I do have another website, andrewshealingarts.com. We are redoing both websites. I'm afraid I haven't been the best webmaster of the universe, and so they're a little outdated, but they are going to be redone within the next month. And
go ahead. And they are up what?
They are up, and they do have information and links and all of those things.
Excuse me, I've been learning about business in recent years, and the main thing that they tell you is that you should do what you're really good at and let somebody else do the rest. So,
oh, that is so true.
So I'm going to tell you, it's just fine that you weren't doing that. Okay, so Cynthia, I really do appreciate the years of work you have put in to study and develop your really comprehensive understanding of emotions, and also to thank you for putting it down so the rest of us can learn and think and explore about emotions. It's totally vital knowledge and information for us humans, and the time has come for us to wake up and incorporate emotions and work with them the way they were designed for us to work with them. So I want to thank you for that and for being with us here on Full Power Living today.
Well, thank you very much, and thank you for having such a forum. It is so important, and what a wonderful thing that you devote an entire program every week to this.
Well, emotions, as I tell people, are part of everything.
Mm-hmm.
We can find them everywhere. All right. Thank you again.
Thank you.
So join us live every Thursday at 9 a.m. Pacific Time, which is noon Eastern, for more powerful experiences on Full Power Living. And remember to listen next week as Wendy Maltz tells us about what she's discovered about women's sexual fantasies, another way that energy moves around. Paul Johnston of Fresh Talk Media is our producer. Thank you, Paul, for that. And Dakey, I'm really glad you're on the line listening, but I think we are going to go, so we'll have you participate at another time unless you speak up right now. Okay. So thank you, Paul, for your years of support and your applied technical genius. For now, I'm Eileen Dillon, your host, reminding you to pay attention not to what you want to overcome, but to what you want to become.
You're listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.